Hey, good morning once again. My name is Sten, just in case we haven't had a chance to meet yet or if this is your first time, really glad you could be here with us this morning. So just about every summer for the last 10 or 15 years, I've taken a fishing trip out west with my brother and some of my best friends to the Bighorn Mountains just outside of Sheridan, Wyoming. It's truly an incredible week, really a special time of year for us all. 2 years ago, my buddy Aaron, he asked all of us to send him a little audio clip, you know, take a little recording of ourselves on an iPhone, and send him a few words about what we look forward to most, what our favorite part of this trip was. And so all seven of us, you know, got our iPhones, and we recorded ourselves talking about what it is that we look forward to most, you know, what is our favorite part of this whole trip, and so we sent these clips to them. And what he did is he took all of our words and he laid them over, you know, photos and videos of all the years that we had spent fishing together. And when he was all finished, he had created this really awesome video, and he shared it with us one night before we headed into the mountains again together. And I'll never forget listening to this. I'll never forget what it is my brother said. Our buddy Aaron chose to kind of conclude the video with words that my brother had written in Cheryl. I'll never forget what he said. It was just, you know, captured perfectly what this so-called Sheridan trip was all about for us. Here's what he said. You can see it up on the side screens. My brother wrote this and spoke this in the video of our so-called Sheridan trip. He said, it's turned into one of the events that can chart many, if not most, of the significant parts of my life. There are not many things that have that kind of history and longevity. You can point to a given year's trip and replay all of the important things that happened in your life that year. Whether it was the first year of college or saying goodbye to my dad or getting married or having kids or changing careers, there's always been a Sheridan trip and a great group of friends to share these events with, which are slowly adding up to a lifetime. Now, I don't know if you have a Sheridan trip in your life, but I do think that there is one event, there's one occasion in all of our lives, same one. I think there's one event in all of our lives that does have this kind of history. It does have this kind of longevity, that does kind of chart time and events in our lives in the very same way. It's Christmas. I think Christmas for us, for you and for me, I think Christmas has a way of charting time and marking significant moments in our lives in the very same way. We mark certain events in our life in relation to Christmas. This is the one time of year, it seems like, for whatever reason, the one time of year that causes us to look back at the year behind us. It causes us to look back. It's the one time of the year we can always point to. We know it's coming. We can always point to it, and then we can recall and we can replay all of the important things, all the significant things that happened in our life in the year or in the years prior. For whatever reason, I think Christmas causes us. We get to the end of the year, and Christmas causes us to get reflective. We start thinking about the year before or the years before, and we get reflective on where we've been, on what we've done, on what we've experienced, on where we're at, and on where we're going. And certainly when we get to this time of year and we look back, certainly there are some highlights, you know, that happen in our life. There are some highlights from the weeks and from the months and from the years that go by, and we love to fill our Christmas cards with all of those highlights. But so often, I think for you and me and for so many people today, so often Christmas is a reminder. Get to the end of the year and Christmas is a reminder of the many things in the year prior that didn't necessarily go according to plan. And that's what can make Christmas sometimes so hard. That's what can make this time of the year so hard sometimes. That's what can steal our joy at Christmas. Right? A year that's gone by that didn't quite go according to plan. We can be so easily kind of haunted or handcuffed by or tripped up by all the ghosts of Christmas past, whether it was losing a mom or a dad or a child, or whether it was losing a job, whether it was, you know, getting a divorce, or whether it was a dream getting put on hold, or whether it was a dream that came to an end, or was a friendship or a relationship that came to end, or whether it was a year of slow and difficult business or a painful rebuilding, maybe rebuilding of a career or a rebuilding of a life or rebuilding of a family or rebuilding of someone's trust in you. Right, maybe it's a year of mistakes or a year of learning that's gone by. Maybe it's a year of just growing older or a year of sickness and health problems. Whatever it is for you, whatever it is for me, there's always a Christmas that marks time and reminds us of a year that's gone by. And if you're anything like me, right, if you're anything like me, the difficulty or the pain of the past, of what's happened before, sometimes it can color kind of our hope or our optimism for the future, right? Sometimes the misses and the missteps and the mishaps and the mistakes and the misfortunes, they kind of feel like too much, too difficult to overcome. And so it can be hard sometimes to get excited for a new year or for a new day when the previous one took so much out of you, right? When the last year didn't go according to plan, then here's what I think was happened, right? When the year behind us or when the years behind us didn't quite go according to plan, then Christmas, it becomes a time of waiting. Of waiting for what's next, of longing for or even hoping for something more, hoping for something to change, hoping for something to get better, hoping for something in your life to become clear, waiting for something to finally come to an end or for something to find its resolution. Right? Maybe right now, this Christmas for you, as you look back or as you look forward, maybe for you, you're waiting for some real direction in your life, waiting to find a real sense of purpose. Maybe you've been spinning your wheels, it feels like, for a while now, trying to find the direction, and nothing seems to be coming clear. Maybe you're waiting for change to come. Maybe it's change for you. Maybe it's a change in someone that you love. Maybe it's a change in your circumstances right now. Maybe you're waiting for some kind of healing. Maybe you're waiting for some kind of forgiveness or waiting for some kind of new confidence in you or waiting for a season of rest in your life. Whatever it is for you, whatever it is that you feel like you might be waiting for this Christmas, that waiting, right, that longing, that hoping for what's to come, that hoping for what might be around the corner, what's just around the next bend, that's what this season before Christmas is all about, this season that we call Advent. That's what this season is all about. And we haven't really made a huge deal about Advent, the Advent season here, because sometimes churches can make a huge deal about Advent, assuming that everybody knows what it's all about, when not everybody does know what it's all about. But that's it, in a nutshell. That's it, that this time of waiting and this time of longing and this time of hoping for what's to come, hoping for what might change, waiting for things to get better, hoping for what it is that might get better this time of year. And I want us to make the most of this time of waiting this time of year. If we flip back through the history in Old Testament, which is the history of God's people before Jesus, if we flip back through this history in the Old Testament and look at God's people, it's a people that are referred to just collectively. We refer to them as the nation of Israel. If we flip back through their history, we see that these people, for generations and generations and generations, these people knew a thing or two about waiting. That they knew a thing or two about waiting and longing and hoping for something more and hoping for something better, because their history as a people, like I said, for generations, it was full of difficulty and full of disappointment, full of, you know, hopes dashed and dreams unfulfilled. That they were, you know, a people in slavery forever and then wandering for years and years and years in the desert. They were just homeless and kind of waiting for what's next. And they were constantly under defeat and destruction and opposition, foreign occupation, right? And they were constantly waiting and hoping for something more. Promised something really great as a people. God's promised them a great blessing, and they were constantly waiting for it, waiting for something more than they were experiencing, waiting for something to bring an end to their troubles. And right in the middle of it all, right in the middle of these troubles, right in a moment when from the north and the south, you know, the foreign troops are encroaching in on them, right in the middle of all this waiting and all this disappointment, God delivers a promise to them. And it's a promise that would have no doubt gotten their attention. It's a promise that in many ways it would have been like a very specific answer to the questions that they had been asking. It would have been an answer that they had been waiting for. It was a promise that when they heard it would have signaled the end, right? That the time was coming, the end of these troubles was on the way, that there would be an end to the darkness, that there would be an end to the despair, an end to the waiting. It was a promise delivered to them right in the middle of this moment. And the promise to them, okay, the promise that God delivered to them in the midst of what it is that they were waiting for, it's the very same promise that God delivers to you and to me. Very same one. It's the very same promise that I think someone needs to hear this morning. We read it in the book of Isaiah as it was delivered to God's people through the prophet Isaiah. And here's what Isaiah said. He said, nevertheless, he's speaking on behalf of God to God's people. He says, nevertheless, that time of darkness and despair will not go on forever. Right? That feeling when you look in the rearview mirror where you look at what is right now and say, hey, this is not what I was hoping for. He's going, hey, that's not going to last. That's not going to be how this goes on. He goes on to say this, that the people who walk in darkness will see a great light. For those who live in a land of deep darkness, a light will shine, right? The way forward will become clear. The path ahead of you, the next steps to take will be made clear for you. A light will shine in the darkness. That's good news, right? For anybody who's waiting, for anybody who's wondering what's next, that's really good news because I know what it's like to feel like I'm walking like in darkness, kind of going like, yeah, I don't know where this is going to end up. I know what that feels like, and I think some of you do too. I mean, if you're honest with yourself, there's been moments or there's been seasons or there's maybe been really long stretches this year even of difficulty, of defeat and doubt and discouragement and disappointment and darkness. And so this is the promise, and the promise is a big one then, that the end of the darkness and the end of the despair is on the way. And if it's true, that's a reason for us to have a whole lot of hope that time is coming. But the question is, what's the foundation of it all? What's the source of that kind of hope? It sounds great. They're up for that. I'm up for that. You're up for that. An end to all this. It sounds great. But what is the actual source of that kind of hope? Isaiah goes on to say this, which for some of you here this morning may sound very familiar to what it is that we read this time of year. Here's what Isaiah says. For a child is born to us. A son is given to us, and the government will rest on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Okay, who is Isaiah talking about? Who is this son? It's Jesus. It's actually what is called like a prophecy. Isaiah's delivering a prophecy, which is just a divine prediction that you can take to the bank, right? He's pointing to Christmas. He's pointing to Jesus. Right, that he's the one that's going to come, that's going to bring an end to all of this darkness and despair. And he gives us some characteristics that we read. He gives us some characteristics for what we might expect, for what they might expect from this child that is born into the world. And each one of these, right, Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, each one of these was actually quite specific. Right, each one of these descriptions, these characteristics was saying something. Each one provided a little glimpse of hope into the real life circumstances that God's people were experiencing. Right, provided some hope into the waiting for God's people. Very specific descriptions and characteristics of this child that is going to be born, spoke right to the very circumstances that they were experiencing. And the same is true for you and me, right? The promise of this Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace, it's the same kind of answer to the exact things that we're experiencing too. I just think we need help to connect a few of the dots, that why those names would signal some real hope for you and for me as well. See, when we read this, here's what's hard. When we read this, or when we hear this, you know, these words every Christmas, and he shall be called Wonderful Counselor, we hear this all the time. When we hear this, or when we read this, or when we sing this at Christmas, I think, this is just me, but I think that we just assume that these are just some nice, poetic, creative, and you know, complimentary ways to speak about Jesus. right? But for God's people, right? For God's people, they would have understood these to be so much more, because they were so much more than that, right? They wouldn't have just said, well, hey, those are just some nice descriptions. These words, these titles, these descriptions and characteristics, they would have understood it to mean so much more than just a few words on the page. And I want us to understand the very same thing. So here's what I want to do. These descriptions were written in, they were delivered in Hebrew, and they actually say a lot more in Hebrew than they do in English sometimes. So I want to do my best to give you just a really quick, I promise I'll try to make it quick, a little Hebrew lesson for you, a little two-minute Hebrew lesson that I think will uncover a whole new meaning to these four descriptions that we read this time of year. We'll start with the first one. It's this description, wonderful counselor. The Hebrew word for wonderful is the word pela, and it actually means wonder, or more so miracle. That's actually what it's getting at, wonder or miracle. It's the same word used throughout the Bible to refer to the wonders of God's work. I mean, like the wonders as in like, no way, that just happened. Like, I can't believe he just pulled that off. Like, am I really seeing this? Is this really happening? Right? The wonders of God's work. So the wonderful in wonderful counselor, it doesn't mean just like, well, isn't he great? I mean, it doesn't just mean like he's the delightful, he's the pleasing counselor, but it means he's the miraculous. Pela, he's a miraculous counselor. He is a miracle working counselor. Born unto you, right? Who does for you what no one else can do. His wisdom for you, his wisdom for your life is unmatched. It is second to none. It's a wonderful counselor. Not just a good counselor, great counselor, great, nice counselor, a miraculous, a miracle-working counselor. That's number one. Here's the next one, a mighty God. In Hebrew, it's a two-word phrase, El Gibor. And I was looking this week at some of the most literal translations of this phrase, a translation that would help us to really understand what this was getting at, what Isaiah was trying to communicate. And here's the one that caught my attention, that El Gabon was suggesting something, when you really look at these words, it was suggesting something of a divine hero. When you put them together, that's what he was trying to communicate when he says a mighty God, a divine hero. I like that. I like that. I mean, you know, for a people that are, you know, under so much attack, that's really good news. I mean, can you imagine a supernatural superhero fighting battles for you? For people whose life is in this constant, you know, waiting, for people who are constantly under attack, this was God's people as a nation, for people who are constantly under attack and constantly, you know, under like military opposition and foreign occupation, which was their life for generations and generations, it doesn't get any better. Put yourself in their shoes. It doesn't get any better than the promise of a divine hero. I mean, other translations said like a champion. Right, a mighty hero. It doesn't get any better than that. When God's people heard that this child that is born into the world, that is born unto us, was to be a divine hero, they'd be thinking, that's what I'm talking about. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's what we need right now. It's a mighty God. Here's the third description, an everlasting father. The Hebrew word for everlasting is the word olam, and it's best understood in a way that would make sense to us. It's best understood, this word olam, as eternal or without end. Okay, so you put that together with father. Father is very much like you'd expect it to be in ancient times. The father of a nation was a very common concept, and it was viewed in very much the same way that a father of a family is. Okay, it was the father who would protect and provide for his children. And so in the same way, this child born unto us was to become a king who would, you know, sit on his throne and who would rule and who would reign and who would be then a father to all of the children, to all of the nation of Israel. He would protect, he would provide for them. And so when you put this together, you start to get a picture of Jesus's then protection and provision and stability and security for you and for me that has no end, right? That is eternal, that doesn't stop, that doesn't quit, that doesn't run out. that never fails you, that never fails me, an everlasting Father, a Father whose security for you knows no end. Here's the fourth one, the Prince of Peace. When we hear the word peace, we read that in English. I think that we mostly think of, this is where my mind goes, and I imagine the same is true for you. We hear the word peace, and mostly we think of like world peace, right? The end of war, right? The absence of conflict. Or we think like peace and calm. We think still and quiet. And that's all very true. Peace is certainly talking about both of those things. But in this case, there's so much more to it. Right, that the Hebrew word for peace is the word shalom, and it communicates something so much more than just that. Shalom is actually a really, really, really loaded term, and among many of the things that it's speaking to actually is the idea of wholeness and being made whole. So shalom isn't necessarily the absence of noise. It's not the absence of conflict or the absence of violence necessary, but it's speaking about the presence of unity and the presence of restoration in a sense of completion, of being made whole. And so this child that is born to us, this Jesus, he's the prince of it. He's the leader of it. He's the ruler. He's the pace setter for this kind of wholeness. He is the one who will bring all things, including you and including me. He is the one that will bring all things to completion, right? To be made whole, okay? I know that's a little technical. I know that gets a little heady here, but what I hope that you would see is that these were just far more than just some kind of abstract or you know, literary, you know, descriptions, flowery descriptions of Jesus. More than just kind of like feel-good names for God's son, for this child that is born to us. These titles were saying something. These titles were communicating something to a people who were waiting for some kind of help to come their way. And these promises of a wonderful counselor and a mighty God and an everlasting Father and a Prince of Peace, these promises would have been music to the ears of God's people. They wouldn't be going, well, he sounds like a pretty nice guy. No, they'd be going, whoa, this sounds like who we have been waiting for. And so here's why I talk about this today. Here's why this promise, here's why this kind of divine prediction, why this prophecy, why this promise, here's why this promise from thousands of years ago matters to you and me. Here's why I think that this should get our attention this Christmas. Here's why a wonderful counselor and a mighty God and an everlasting Father and a Prince of Peace is good news for you and for me. We might not be under foreign occupation like the nation of Israel. We might not be like kicked out of our homeland as they often were. Right, we may not be under this kind of attack and waiting to be rescued, waiting for help to come, but for some of us, based on the year that's gone by, or maybe the years that have gone by, some of us are waiting for something. That there's something in our life that they're waiting for, and here's where I think that we get stuck. Here's what I think is hard. Here's what I think is the challenge for you and me when we're in any kind of waiting. Here's what I think we do. We look for miracles from people who can't perform them. We will look for heroes in places that can't produce them. We look for security in things that do not last. And we look for wholeness from things that will never satisfy. That's why I think a wonderful counselor and a mighty God and an everlasting Father and a Prince of Peace matters for us, because this is what we do. It's a perpetual cycle then for us of disappointment. It's an unwinnable game when this is the way we go about looking for things when we're in a time of waiting. It's an unwinnable game that we play, and yet somehow we end up playing it every time. And then we wonder. We wonder why we're like stuck in a rut. We wonder why nothing is really getting better, why nothing is, the ball isn't moving down the field. We wonder why nothing has changed. We wonder why we're not really moving from dark to light. Why, right? Because I think when we're in these moments, we look for miracles from people who can't perform them, heroes in places that don't produce them, security in things that do not last, and wholeness from things that will never satisfy. If I can be honest with you this morning, I know what it's like. I've been experiencing some of this firsthand. Every day and every week of this year, practically. Planning a church, you know, which is what we're doing here, not even a year old, really, but planning a church from nothing into hopefully something. Planning a church has been a huge undertaking. For me and for my family. And my leadership coaches who work with me in this, my leadership coaches told me and my colleagues, they warned us, not in a sense to keep us away from it, but they warned us just in the sense that we would be prepared for this. They warned us that planting a church would push and poke and prod at all of your emotions, at all of your inadequacies, at all of your insecurities, right? That this activity of planting a church, it would push and poke and prod at all of that stuff in you, in me. And let me tell you something. They were right. They were very, very right. And I don't share that with you so that you feel sorry with me, feel sorry for me. That's not at all why I share this with you. I share this with you because I want you to know that I know what it's like to be waiting and hoping and wishing for something, because I've spent so many days and weeks over the last year waiting and hoping and longing for the day when I don't have the emotional volatility of an ultra pregnant woman. Like that roller coaster happening in me, I keep waiting, when will this end? All the emotions, all the insecurities, all the things flying through my head and my heart, I've been waiting and hoping for that to come to an end. And so to help me navigate those emotions, to help me kind of work my way through those insecurities, to help me be the sharpest and the healthiest leader and pastor and husband and dad that I can be, I see a counselor in the Twin Cities. You know, for me, it's just really helpful to have a place where I can just kind of process what I need to process and just kind of do out loud what I need to kind of work through, right? So I see a counselor every now and again in the Twin Cities. And the last few times around have been a little bit frustrating. That I've been hanging with this guy. The last few times have been hard because I've been in a few weeks here where I don't really feel like I'm moving the ball down the field. I don't really feel like I've been making progress in some of these areas that I hoped I would. And so the last time that I was hanging with this guy, truthfully, it was just a few days ago, this past Thursday, that the last time I was with this guy, I kind of voiced my discouragement in the process, which was huge for me as like a passive Swedish Scandinavian dude, like to actually kind of speak up and you know, say like, hey, I'm not sure how that was a big deal for me. Okay, so I finally voiced kind of my like discouragement with this guy when we got to, you know, the end, and he said, hey, well, you know, what should we schedule the next time for you to come around? And I was kind of going, you know, I don't really know. And so I asked him essentially, like, what's the plan here? You know, like, what's the plan? I didn't say it directly, but after the fact, I realized what I was doing, and I realized what I was thinking. I didn't say it directly to him, but in a way, I was kind of asking, when are you going to fix this? Right? We've been at this for a little while now. It's good. It's great. You're a great dude. But when are you going to make this better for me? Right? I drive, spend a lot of time, spend a lot of money, come and do this deal. Like, when are you going to make this better for me? And almost as soon as these, you know, kind of questions came out of my mouth, and as soon as these thoughts were kind of bouncing around in my head, my own words that I was writing this week for this very message started flooding into my mind. I started to realize, Sten, you know what you're doing? You're asking for a miracle from a guy who can't perform one. You're looking for a hero in a place that cannot provide one. And I'm not saying don't bother seeing a counselor. That's not the message here, because I'm going to continue to see mine, because he's a great voice and a great coach in my life. That's not what I'm saying. But for me, as I drove home, the message was very clear. Sten, this is a good deal. You got to keep doing this. But the message for me was very clear as I drove home. Sten, you got to make sure that you're also seeking the wisdom of a different kind of counselor. The only kind of counselor who can provide the wisdom and the satisfaction and the validation that your soul desires right now. That's the wonderful counselor, the wondrous and the miraculous, miracle-working counselor. I drove home going, Sten, you got to change some things up, man. You got to get back into what we call God's word. You got to read God's word, and you got to get on your knees and pray hard for God's wisdom. Not just wisdom for your next sermon, not just wisdom for your next message, but wisdom for the next step and for the next stage and for the next season and for the next day or week or year that's to come for you. You gotta work hard about going after that kind of wisdom. You gotta open yourself up to more people, to the wise counsel of godly people who know you well. Why? Because the wisdom of Jesus Christ, that this child born to us, this wonderful counselor, the wisdom of Jesus Christ applied to your life is like nothing else. It is what we learn here. It's supernaturally insightful. It's that kind of wisdom. I'm going, man, you can't get that from any other source. That's not to say that other sources don't have their place in our life, because the wise and the godly counsel of people is so necessary in our lives. But I just realized, Sten, what you're really after right now, the questions that you're asking, the waiting that you're in, right? You don't get the answers. You don't get the wisdom from any other source. So you can't afford to be making decisions right now without consulting, without getting a word, without getting wisdom from the miraculous counselor. And I realize I can't call him, I can't refer to him or rely on him as the wonderful counselor if I don't. You can't refer to him as the wonderful counselor if you don't embrace his wisdom for your life, for your salvation, for your family, for your finances, for your career or your calling or your future. And I can't do that either. That's this week, Thursday, what I start realizing. So then you're looking for the answers to these questions in the wrong places. That's just me. That's just me, looking for answers, looking for change in me, looking for validation, looking for satisfaction, looking for wholeness, looking for all things to come together, and looking for it and expecting it in all of the wrong places. And so this is my simple question to you this Christmas. What are you waiting for right now? What are you longing for right now? What are you hoping for based on what is happening or based on what has happened in a season of your past? Regardless of what it is that's happened, what is it that you are waiting for? What is it that you are hoping for? What is it that you are longing for? And where are you looking for it? Where are you looking for the answers to it all? Are you looking for advice and for wisdom in the wrong places? Are you looking for someone or something to rescue you, to swoop in and to save you, to be your hero? Are you looking for security and stability from things that will not last, that'll be good for a moment, but that will not last forever? Are you looking for people or for relationships or for love or for money or food or looks or whatever? Are you looking for things to complete you in a way that just simply isn't possible? Wherever you are at today, the good news this Christmas is that the darkness will not last. Why? For a child has been born to us. And the truth is, it's not just a child, it's not just a son that's been given to us. The truth is, it's a son that's been given to you. A child is born, a son has been given to you. And he might be the wisdom and the counsel. He might be the strength and the security and the peace and the wholeness that you need now more than ever. And my hope is that you might find what you need in him this Christmas. Let me pray. God, we give you thanks for this morning, and we give you thanks for the time that we get to call a timeout and to set our hearts and our minds here on you. And God, I pray that you might be doing supernaturally insightful things in our lives this Christmas, God. As these final days and moments of this time of year and as this season wind down, God, would you be working in us? Would you be working in our hearts to help us see where it is that we look for answers or for advice or for security and strength and wisdom? God, would you help us to be mindful of the places that we're looking that where we just will not find answers, God? And would you help us this Christmas to understand that God, you might be the one who brings the things that we need, that's exactly what it is that we celebrate this time of year, God. So would you help us to turn to you, to lean on you, to pursue you in ways that maybe we never have before, God. And we pray that might have a supernatural, God, effect on our life, and that maybe this Christmas would never be the same because of it. God, we give you thanks for who you are, and we give you so much thanks for your son, Jesus Christ, who was the best gift that we could ask for. And we give you so much thanks here this morning. And we pray these things in his powerful name. Amen.